Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
He's just what you'd expect from a man who covers the NFL. 6'4", 300 pounds. Fiery? But he does know the Chiefs as well as anyone. He's the Chiefs beat writer for the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, on the program.
Is that breaking news? Or is that something we should have seen
before?
I think that's
last month.
It is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So then we'll just sweep that under the rug and act like it never happened.
Yeah. We wouldn't tell people what it was about.
Now, we were quizzing ourselves about whether or not Al Michaels is done on Sunday Night Football, and it appears that he is.
Yeah.
That's news to you, right?
Yes, that is news to me. I did not know that.
Well, what are you seeing? This is what we're kicking around as to, like, why wasn't Al Michaels on the broadcast last night? It was Mike Tirico. I've been told by people that NBC hired Tirico, one for the Olympics, but also as an eye towards him being the replacement on Sunday Night Football for Al Michaels, that they were ready to hand the duties off. Mm-hmm. You don't usually do it mid-season.
No.
But you're seeing that he's done and headed to Thursday night on Amazon, or what?
The link that I let me read something else, because the story that I had was led to a link that is a firewall, so I'm not entirely certain.
Okay. Was the paper called The Onion?
No, it was New York Post. It was behind some kind of firewall.
I don't have New York Post access. The New York Post headlines are usually all I need. I forgot he. One of the greatest headlines of all time.
The best.
When John Gotti was found innocent because the witness got up on the witness stand and said, I don't know, I don't remember, I forgot. The headline was, I forgot he.
That's pretty good.
With a big good. Smiling John Gotti on the front page of the paper.
They're headline writers for listeners. I guess, and here, this is from
Bozo the Coach. That was one of theirs when they had... Was that Rich Kotite?
Mm-hmm.
Bozo the Coach.
They were amazing during the 2015 World Series. This is a little more clear sporting news. It says, as Michaels has gotten older, NBC occasionally gives him weeks off throughout the season. When Tirico joined NBC in 2016, he began filling in for Michaels where he never had weeks off. This is one of Michaels' weeks off, so that's why Tirico will be stepping in. He's expected to fill in a couple more times this season, but those games are to be determined.
So then he's not out.
Yeah, he's not out. That was the schedule. But this other story seemed to suggest that they were making a change there and that Michaels was going to go do Thursday night games.
Well, I know
Amazon,
I think his contract is up after this year, and I think there was conversation as to whether or not he was going to be back, and the idea was that probably not. And so that may be looking ahead to next year.
I think that's true. This is the story that they referenced in the New York Post. Michaels will end up calling Thursday Night Football on Amazon. It says next. He left out an important word, next season.
Next year.
And Mike Tirico will take over for Allen Sunday Night Football. So I think that's going to begin next year.
Okay. So one more year with Al.
On Sunday Night Football.
Welcome to, so when he does Amazon Prime, it's like, now you can get your mouthwash, your paper clips. I can't do the,
well, neither can I really.
Mouthwash, paper clips, your Fruit of the Loom underwear, and your football right here on Amazon Prime.
But you want to have Collinsworth to go, oh, I don't do Collinsworth either.
Well, I will tell you, listening to Tony Romo, like, Frank Caliendo has nailed Tony Romo.
Yes.
Are they going to throw it here, Jim? I don't know. Let's watch.
Tony.
Caliendo, when he was in, which, by the way, true. Caliendo had to be super pissed when Gruden got busted.
Yep.
Like, there goes a great impression.
Yeah. There was a video I saw on either Twitter or TikTok somewhere. It was just a clip of some.
You spend a lot of time watching the TikTok, do you?
There's some funny stuff there.
Okay, I just didn't want to breeze right by that.
There's some funny stuff there. You just have to kind of train your browser to, you know, feed you the right stuff.
I'm going
to
pass.
That's the demographic they're going for.
I think I'll let you find the ones you think I need to see and send them over.
I'm not the demographic they're searching for, but there's plenty of cool stuff on there. But one of them was just a scene from some movie where a guy was repeatedly screaming F-bombs louder and louder and louder and ranting around his house. And someone said, Frank Caliendo, when the John Gruden news broke. I'm like, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
50-plus-year-old fat guys. No, not the TikTok demo.
They're going for a little bit younger.
Yeah.
Huh.
But there you are, ready to step in and watch it anyway.
I don't post any videos, but I found three or four really good stand-ups that I hadn't heard of before. I'm like, this guy is really good. They do all kinds of music stuff where they break down individual tracks. It's very cool.
All right.
Just, you got to know what to look for.
I'm sure. I'm not going to devote six months of my life figuring out.
Sam, how's it going, buddy?
I'm doing okay, Jed.
Sam McDowell's here, a little bit under the weather, but he came. Do you care if Sam gets a little time?
Come on, Sam.
I feel fine. My voice just isn't cooperating with me.
Really? What's the problem?
You heard me talk to you on the phone yesterday.
I did.
I'm better than I was yesterday, right?
You are better than you were yesterday.
Yesterday, I felt like I couldn't even get a question at a press conference.
So it was like a Wednesday.
I have no idea. So we flew out on Saturday. And I had a conversation with Vahe, our columnist, before I boarded the plane. On
touchdown in Memphis.
As soon as I stepped out, and we flew to Baltimore. As soon as I stepped out in Baltimore, all of a sudden I couldn't talk to him anymore.
Really?
And it was just gone.
Makes me want to jump right back on a plane.
Exactly. Yeah, I did. It'll make you feel better.
Sanitizing's working great there,
I went and took an at-home COVID test before I went to the game on Sunday, and I took an at-home COVID test before I came in here.
More positive, but thought I'm soldiering on.
So yeah. I don't buy it. No one's going to tell me what I am and am not.
It's positive. So. You know how these tests lie.
So you doing okay, Sam?
I feel fine.
Okay. Do you watch the TikTok?
I don't watch TikTok. No.
No?
No.
Do you post on the TikTok?
I don't post on the TikTok either. No.
Do you have a TikTok account?
I do not have one.
I actually do. Don't even know how to log into it, but I got one because I'm like, well, I probably need to monitor my kids' stuff. So, don't let anyone know, but I have an account, but I don't know what I'm doing, so.
You just tell your daughters that you have an account. That's the whole point.
If they're making an ass out of themselves, let me know, please, because I haven't mastered the art of how to track what they're doing. If they're doing anything on TikTok. So you made it back. That's good.
Made it back. I'm here.
Yeah, you're healthy. You're ready to go. Was rock bottom halftime? was that rock bottom for the season?
Well, I think rock bottom would have been if they had played another half the way they played that first half. But
So then when was rock bottom if that wasn't
Well, I think as the ball is floating in the air that Patrick Mahomes threw on that 3rd-and-1 pass, I think that's rock bottom for that. That's the worst play he's ever made, and just the timing of when it came in this season. I actually thought that pass suggested a lot about what's going on with this team. Patrick Mahomes said after the game that the way that they came back, he feels like could propel them. But what I thought was interesting about that quote is he said, "With the way this season's gone," and to me that was acknowledgement that. This team's not catching the breaks that it caught last year, and it is affecting their psyche. And I thought on that play, all that came together in sort of one snapshot.
If it's come up black 16 times in a row, it doesn't mean red is due, right? It's still 49.6% or whatever with the green on the roulette wheel. But over the long haul, right, each next spin is still roughly 50-50. But over the long haul, it should balance out, right? So if the ball is consistently going to the other team every time it's on the ground, there should be a stretch when it goes your way. And if the Chiefs catch that stretch at the end of the year and possibly in the postseason, they'll be very difficult to beat, right? Like, to me, I'm less concerned that the turnovers continued. Yes, that was Patrick Mahomes' worst throw of his career. I think he'll be the first one to acknowledge it. Probably did. In postgame, I don't know, did he say that was the worst one?
Well, he didn't say it was the worst. I mean, he acknowledged how bad it was, but didn't say it was the worst.
What did he say? Like, when I was in junior high this one time, like, did he give you an example?
Well, he said that he said after the Ravens game that that was the worst interception of his career, and I think we all agree that this tops that one.
Okay. So
easily.
Whatever he thinks, it doesn't matter. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter where it ranks. It's just how is he going to do it again? Do you think he's going to do it again?
No, but, I
think he will. I just don't think it'll be in the next 10 weeks.
I don't think it'll be like that. I mean, that was just the culmination of, like, 8 things that had gone wrong.
And right.
Probably number one being the decision to even do it. Number two is he saw it wrong. I mean, his guy wasn't that he claimed he was thrown to wasn't even open. I think the ball slips out of his hands. I think the fact that they're in the red zone. I think the fact that this team is 2-3. There's just like all
but he
sorts
drops
of
a snap.
Yeah, he drops the snap first. Right. There's so many there's so many factors that make this one worse than I think any other one could pop up. But I'm gonna continue your roulette analogy because if it's a gambling analogy, I'll just float on with it.
Yeah.
I think that this team had gotten to where black had come up so many times in a row that they expected black to come up again. And early
so
this
you,
season.
So you thought, hey, this it was they walked into the half, they thought, we're screwed. This is just what we are this year.
Well, I think the opposite happened in the first month of the season to where things didn't go well and they thought that they could just pull a rabbit out of the hat at the end of the game and everything would be okay. And they learned the lesson in the first 5 weeks that that's not how it works. And so that's why I do think that second half, and I know it's against a bad team, but that's why I think it was really important, is they got some of that quote-unquote swagger back that, you know, that you may be able to fight with them for a half, but the talent's going to take over late if they can execute. And that's the first time that I feel like that they've – and I realize they came back against the Browns, but this is the first time where I just felt like it had that sort of energy that no matter what happens – Everything's okay. You don't have to panic. It doesn't have to snowball if something goes wrong. And they got it together, unlike that I feel like that they've done in the first month.
Yeah, but isn't part of that because of the caliber of opponent? They had an opponent that would allow that to happen, too.
But they also, I mean, the caliber of opponent absolutely matters, but the way they played the first half was against that same opponent.
Sure.
So if you just use a relative comparison first half to second half, you know, I think the point still stands.
Now, the fear I would have is, talking about these things happening in the middle of a game, a team chases a team, and they catch them in a basketball game, and they go, whew, we caught them. And then the other team goes on an 8-0 run. Do they go into this coming week thinking, that was us. We got our championship swagger back. We really took apart a team.
Right.
They float in Tennessee thinking everything's good, and they got another one of those bad first halves coming because they think everything's okay.
Yeah, I'll even add on to your analogy is to what Curtis said. Do they view themselves, did they roll up their sleeves and go to work and play harder or play differently, play smarter, play more protective, whatever, however you want to describe it, and that's what made them become an effective team, and do they go back to thinking they're rock stars?
Yeah, I definitely think that's in play this week. You know, is that going to happen? I think that's impossible to predict until we see him Sunday. But I think that's at play. You know, those are conversations that are certainly happening inside that facility. Is it may have worked out at the end of this game in the second half, but there's zero reason why that first half should have happened. And that first half happens against better opponents. Then the second half, you know, it's going to have to be. It's going to be. You're going to get yourself in a bigger hole.
Why is Tyreek Hill not catching the ball? Right, like, and I've got a lot more patience with this one this week. He really did have to he slipped.
He
had to reach
out,
for
yeah.
it. He's not the kind of guy with, like, these big, huge hands that just snatches. You know, he's not going to Odell Beckham Jr. a one-handed grab like that. That's not – he just doesn't have – he has other incredible physical gifts, but that's not one of them. He needs to catch that ball, even with the slip. I mean, but the way – I don't think people realize reaching your arms out the way it is with shoulder pads and a helmet – you know, the amazing things that these receivers do. But that being said, it's becoming a little more commonplace with him, right?
And, so kind of.
And he's also the little Walter Payton high kick. I mean, he seems to want to put on in the touchdown reaction and big plays, jumping up. Like, it seems like there's a big focus on the showmanship part of the equation for him right now. And maybe he's lost a little focus on the little things that allowed him to become the kind of receiver he is.
Yeah, so it's his third drop this year. You know, I think he had – it's 5 and 6 over the last 2 years. I can't remember which is which. So it's a higher rate than what he's been dropping the ball. The significance of it is where the ball ends up after he drops it, that they become highlight plays the other way mm-hmm. and potentially game-changing plays the other way. But it's not just dropping the ball. I mean, he fumbled against the Chargers. It's 3 times in 4 games now that he has been directly responsible for a turnover.
And what do you attribute that to? Bad luck? This is just a run of bad luck for them as a group? Or the success has gone to their heads? They forgot what it was that made them. They forgot the little things, the attention to details, the hard work. There's something that's missing that was there that they're not There's an I that's not being dotted and a T that's not being crossed by this team.
Yeah, I think if you read between the lines of the quarterback's comments, he tells you that he didn't think their attention to detail has been there throughout the entire offseason. I mean, that's the whole point of him talking about going undefeated is his concentration on every week that he didn't feel like was there. So I think that's definitely in play with the entire team. I think, you know, when you reach back-to-back Super Bowls, your concentration is on the end game and not the details that it takes to get you to the end game.
Did you say there was a difference between the first half and the second half and how they played?
The Chiefs?
Yeah, like not the results, but how they played. The effort level, the execution, or was it just two turnovers in the red zone again?
Three turnovers even, but you know.
Three turnovers, but the two picks were in the red zone. The fumble came out around midfieldish, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, Eric.
Because we know
that. It was
two,
about the 30 yard line.
Yeah.
The Washington 30, or the Chief. Yeah, Washington 30 yard line or so, wasn't it?
The one pick on Tyreek Hill that was on Tyreek Hill came at like the 5 or 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. The other one came at the 20. It was 3rd and 1 at the 20.
Hardman,
so Hardman
had like a 12-yard gain that was like in the 35 range or so.
35, what, their own or the other?
No, it was in Washington territory.
Okay, so the other two were in the red zone. I mean, so like I would bristle a little bit at like that they played better as much as, well, not turning the ball over is playing better, right, catching the ball. But like I think the effort was there, right, that the physical exertion of energy was there. Was their focus? Maybe not, right? But they were going up and down the field. And if both of those turnovers, both of the interceptions, end up being field goals, then it's 16-13 at the half? Mm-hmm. If they're both touchdowns, it's 24-13, and the feeling is that the route's on. So I think they were closer to being there in the first half. But I come back to, I think some of it's the level of opponent, right? That's where, like, I don't even know that the Titans, let's see what they do against the Bills tonight. I suspect the Bills are going to handle business against them. Maybe not. Bills are in a letdown situation after beating Kansas City, so maybe not. Maybe Tennessee rises up. But I'm not sold on Tennessee as a team. Now, if they get Julio Jones and A.J. Brown out there together, they can be pretty impressive. Defensively, I don't think they're very good. But I do feel like they played better, but I don't want to get excited because it's just Washington.
See, I think that the turnovers, and, you know, I would have said the same thing last week, and then they turned the ball over 3 times. I don't think that the way they're turning the ball over is part of some worrisome pattern. I think they've had a lot of sort of fluky turnovers this year. You know, Eric Bieniemy.
Other than the two bad throws by Mahomes.
The decision to throw the ball in 3rd and 1 was the worst decision he's made. I would argue that I was surprised he called the pick against Baltimore the worst interception of his career because, in my opinion, their defense wasn't stopping anybody that day. It's 3rd down anyway. He's about to get sacked. You know, I mean, they turned the ball over in plus territory rather than, what, giving it to the Ravens at the 15-yard line. I didn't see a whole lot of difference in the Ravens starting to drive at the 40 and the Ravens starting to drive at the 15 that game.
Right.
Three of his interceptions fall into that category. Three of them have gone off of his receivers. You know, obviously the 8th one's awful. The 8th one can't happen. But otherwise, I don't see that a lot of the way they're turning the ball over is going to be something that's super worrisome over the long run.
I agree.
It's really weird to say because they've turned the ball over at a historic rate for an Andy Reid team in this city.
The only thing I would add is I think Mahomes has been due for a bit of a market correction. I think he has had more interceptable balls. I know Todd Lebo. Were you traveling today?
I don't listen to Lebo at all.
Okay, that's good to know. Anyway, he was asking Reed about, do you chart interceptable passes and like how do you go about doing it? Well, we know they do that at Pro Football Focus and Football Outsiders, and I think he's had more interceptable, like I read a story, 49% of all interceptable passes, what most people would consider, and I don't remember if it's PFF. I think it was PFF, that 49% of the passes that they deem interceptable, the ability is there to pick it off, actually get intercepted. And I think he was living at like 33, 25. Like I think that he was due to have some tip balls go against him. And because usually when a guy, when he'd make a bad decision, the guy wouldn't come down with it. And so I think part of that, we're just seeing that market correction, but he makes so many more big plays that's going to – and that's what – maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why Tom Brady's won won 6 out of 20 with the Patriots was because, you know, there were 6 times that he was hot. There were 6 times that he got lucky. Actually, you go back and look, there's plenty of INTs in the postseason because the defenses get better,
yeah.
Right? So teams usually do a pretty good job, and the weather gets cold, and I think that makes it easier to throw interceptions. But, you know, maybe that's just it. This is cold Patrick Mahomes or unlucky, and if you catch the lucky streak in the postseason, then so be it.
I love to run this by someone like Eric, who it's a statistical.
Well, I'm glad Sam's
someone who
here.
Studies it, but I think you guys are both analytical as well. I buy the market correction to a degree.
Market correction of
as far as interceptable okay. passes and turnovers. I think those numbers are obviously compiled over a long period of time, and that's what you would expect any given day. Would you say the number of percentage of passes?
49,
and he was at what percentage?
I'm guessing. It was a story written in general. It wasn't here's Mahomes' yeah. numbers. It was just the general overall numbers that come along with interceptable passes. I do feel like that most games I come away going, ooh, they could have got him with that one.
Yeah.
You know, and there's and maybe that's just fandom.
And it looked like they were just watching good luck early in that game. They had, in the first drive, I think they had two consecutive plays who were almost turnovers that weren't. You're like, oh, maybe things have turned around,
right.
And then they didn't. But
well, but into Sam's point, I haven't come away thinking, ooh, and there were two more. That they yeah. should have got
that Washington was the Washington one where Tyreek Hill slips. By the way, so I think we still would have all called that one a bad luck interception on the opening drive. Was the first one that I can remember, and somebody listening probably can think of another one, but that I thought that guy's got to have that interception. And there were, I think we if we actually
and he
went
got
through,
it. He did have it.
No, I'm talking about the one where Tyreek Hill slips on the opening drive. He slips on a slant ball. And Mahomes throws it. It's right after Kelce fumbled after he was down, so it didn't count as a fumble. But it's a couple snaps later, on his own in his own half of the field. Mahomes throws a slant. Tyreek Hill slips on the route, and it goes right to the defender, and he drops it. But
I haven't watched the game back again yet. So
there were several plays, and I'd be curious if we actually sat down and watched all 16. But I can think of just off the top of my head, the Patriots dropped 3 interceptions against Mahomes last year. The Falcons dropped one that should have sealed the
game.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I usually come away being like he got away with one or two. Like I don't think Mahomes is going to go 47-4 a lot in his career. I think he's more likely to break touchdown records and go 60-14,
yeah,
60-16, because he's willing to put it in harm's way. Generally speaking, it's at times all quarterbacks get the ones the receiver should have caught that bounce up into the air and hose them. But I think he's willing to try to make a play, and I don't think you want to take that out of him. I think the Alex Smith 23-4, somebody else can have that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because I'll take the other 27 touchdowns that Mahomes will throw, along with the 5 extra, 6, 7, 8 extra interceptions. The touchdowns are worth way more than keeping that interception total down, to which I think Alex Smith, there were throws that were there that he just wouldn't take because he knew he was going to keep getting paid. And maybe it's not just about money, but he knew he was going to keep being the starter. As long as he didn't kill his team. Mahomes knows there are times they need him to go win a game, and he'll go do it. He knows he can do it, and he'll go do it. My point is, during this stretch, I don't think of, like, two more holy cow. Plus, if that dumbass hadn't dropped this one, and, you know, if that one didn't, you know, like, I don't think, I feel like he's paying for every mistake he makes right now.
Yeah,
and it doesn't usually work that way. Usually, according to the numbers, you pay for 49% of them.
There actually is a misconception, though, that he's this, like, guy that takes a bunch of chances. The stats don't bear that out. He actually takes fewer risk into what's called tight windows than every other quarterback
True.
In the entire league. So they've only been keeping that stat for 4 years now.
But it's I'll push back on that from the standpoint. I agree with you, and I mean this as a compliment to him. I think other quarterbacks are like, I think he's open, and they throw it. I think he knows when they're open, but I think he will push it into, you know, when he threw it up for Travis Kelce in the, what was the game he threw the pick at the end, the Chargers, right? Was that the one where he overthrew
Correct.
It?
Rainbowed, yeah.
He's like, we got to make a play here. And I'm going to put it out there and give him a shot. Like, that he actually, Kelce isn't, there aren't guys draped all over him, but he's under duress, and he's like, I got to throw it out there to a spot that I think he can run under and get it. I think he puts the ball in harm's way more than, I've seen the numbers you're talking about, but some of the floaters, like the floater 2 weeks ago to Josh Gordon, I'm going to put it out there and let my guy make a play. Like, that is a very interceptable ball, and he does that quite a bit. because he's got quality receivers. You know, like Travis Kelce can box a guy out, can play low post football, for lack of a better term, and go get it. I know what you're saying, and he gets a lot of, there's like the highest percentage of throws of a guy with a window of such and such, and he's like second on the list, and it's like speaks to how open. I read somebody trying to use that against him as to why, well, it's all Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, they just get, and Andy Reid, he just gets everybody wide open. Yeah, but there are plenty of balls that he lets them just go make a play too.
Yeah, I mean, so the stat is just like aggressive percentage. And in 4 years they've been keeping it, there has not been a quarterback that's finished under 10% of their throws being within a tight window, which is a defender's within 1 yard of the intended target. And he's at 8.3% this year. So it's just, it's ironic that it's coming in this year in which he's already got 8 interceptions in 6 games. But it's, you know, the interceptions and the way he plays behind the line of scrimmage leads a lot of people to think that he's this gigantic risk taker. But what he's doing behind the line of scrimmage and all that work, whether it's scrambling, whether it's the arm angles, whether it's, you know, I mean, heck, we've obviously seen him throw a ball left-handed, seen him throw no-look passes. That's all intended to keep that window open. The arm angles to get a better angle, of course, at the guy who already is open. The no-look pass that he throws to Marcus Kemp is to keep that opening, to prevent a linebacker from cutting into there. The scrambles are to allow more time for a guy to get open, to find that opening.
Like the ball he threw to Tyreek Hill, crossing
exactly
the opposite direction, for, yeah, it ended up getting called
so
back. But
it seems yeah like this gigantic risk play, but he scrambles to wait on the guy to get open.
And he so scrambles then he throws, to draw the defense right.
Exactly.
Then he just chucks it way out in front of Tyreek Hill where there's nobody clear
on the
left side.
Right, and the mm-hmm guy's open. So by the time he throws it, he is throwing into an opening there. The plays that you're talking about with the Travis Kelce thing are very specific situations. You know, the Ravens interception, that interception, and the Eagles interception all fall into the same category. Third down and long, he's about to get sacked, and he just determines, my calculation here is that this risk is better than punting and just giving up here. And with the way the defense has been playing, he's right. I mean, it is better to take more chances. But I'm just pointing out that those are coming in very specific situations. It's not all about him just being more aggressive in general.
What I don't necessarily buy, though, as far as the bad luck, is that if someone's had good luck for an extended period of time, that they're necessarily due for a run of bad luck. I think what you're due for is the normal amount of luck. And so if a guy who's playing in a sport where he's 49% is expected number and he's at 32, I don't think he's due for an 8-week span where it's 66. I think he's due for an 8-week span that it's 49.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily, if you've cheated fate, I
disagree, because on any next throw, yes, but over the long haul, it's that was my point about roulette. If it's been black 10 times in a row, it's not overwhelmingly likely that it's going to be red on the next turn. But if you stand and watch the wheel, clock it, mm-hmm, and pay attention to it, a run is going to come the other way, right? It's still going to balance out.
I think that's something that's random chance compared to something which interceptions,
yes,
aren't necessarily
and
random chance.
To me. But random chance does not go heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails. Random chance will put 5 in a row one way. That's the random chance of it. And just as it went one way, it is inevitable that it will go the other way. I would disagree. Like, it doesn't mean that it has to happen next. You're right. Maybe if he's been tracking at 32%, he's 32% likely to be picked off for the next week or the next calendar year. But make no doubt about it, there's a stretch that's coming that it's all going to burn him, right? Because, like, yes, after every 10 in a row heads, it's still only 50% that it's going to be heads. But there will be a stretch of tails that will come. That's the randomness. The random is, random is never back and forth, one for one. It's
right,
a series of runs that over the long haul balance out. So if it has been all on one side, there may be another run of black, like we do the roulette wheel. 10, you know, 10 come black, and then the next 6 are 3 each, and then another 10 of black. But make no mistake about it, there's a mother of a run coming on red at some point.
Yeah.
The likelihood that you should go there and start putting money down and betting red, no. But it will come.
The oddity of what we're seeing is that they came back to back. I mean, that's why it seems like such vast extremes, because it is vast extremes.
Yes.
And they don't usually come back-to-back like this. It is usually more like what you're saying. At some point, it's going to go through a 3- or 4-game stretch where it seems like every interceptable ball he throws does get an interception. The fact that it comes after he had 5 interceptions for an entire season, that's why it seems so unusual and why a lot of people want to know what's different about this year, when in reality the stats show he's not more aggressive. He's playing really well.
Yeah.
And a lot of other stats. We're seeing the other end of the spectrum right now.
Yeah. This is what it looks like when the guy isn't on fire.
Exactly.
I'll live with it.
Yeah. And
I'm good.
And that's why it's not cause for alarm. I mean,
exactly.
That's the bigger story here,
yes.
Right? Why it's not cause for alarm.
More with Sam McDowell joins us here each and every week in the program, brought to you by Corona. Corona Light and the Corona Premier. Get it in the cans. If you are looking to tote it around Arrowhead Stadium in a cooler, lot lighter in the cans, you can even get the Corona Hard Seltzers in the can. Zero carbs, zero sugars. Get the Corona Hard Seltzers wherever you buy your Corona.
The program with Soren Petro.
He is not a journalist in the normal sense of the word. He's a columnist, and he's a person who dispenses opinion.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Chiefs now 10-1 all time against Washington. How many all-time series are more one-sided?
None. Than there's never been an ass-kicking laid on one franchise like the Chiefs are on football team. I'll say the answer is none.
Sam, what do you think? 10-1?
I didn't hear it.
So the question was...
Yeah, good. Thanks for coming, Sam. Appreciate it.
Chiefs 10-1 all-time against Washington. How many series are more one-sided than that?
That have at least 10 games, I'm guessing.
Actually, that's how I initially looked back. I looked back, and there actually isn't. One that
even
has
if
less
you did,
than 10.
Even if you did,
okay.
No one's like 1-0.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or 4-0.
Yeah, I mean, so
and if somebody, they were, it wouldn't be what this one is.
Somebody has to be at least 11-1. Let's say 1. I mean, you probably saw the stat that somebody hasn't beat.
There is one, and actually, I didn't see a stat. I poured through the NFL record. In fact,
oh wow! See,
for
if I'd known you had
30 minutes,
if I'd known you'd done that, I might have guessed.
Why would you wonder if he had done that? I mean, what part of having a life do you see connected to this man?
I was talking
over
to
here?
Adam Hill of the weekend. I gave him the stat that.
So it is one though.
It is one. Eagles over the Jets, Philly 11-0 all time in the Battle of the Green.
Wow, that's the one I had in mind.
But I was talking to Adam. I gave him,
did
yeah.
you?
I did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I gave Adam the stat that it was the first time there had been 22 times since the merger that a team had replaced a coach within the first 5 weeks of the season. It's the first time it had happened that the team had a winning record, and I knew why. And he goes, we got done. He goes, where'd you get that stat? I go, I stared at the NFL record in fact book for half an hour.
Not doing any bragging about it.
He's like, really? Wow, okay.
Not doing any bragging about the fact that he did it.
We all
that had
be,
that kind of time on a Friday night, but he
we
did.
All, we all have to be good at something.
And Adam said, I'm never going to use that stat. Why did you waste your time telling me?
He told me to send it to him so he could use it.
Yeah. Was he going to credit you? Or was he like Bob Glauber going to use your stuff and not credit you?
Bob Glauber always credits me.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
He had one in there. There's one time.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well,
remember, we busted him on it for the in the air.
That's right. And maybe that's why he does it all the time now.
He's like, yeah, I can't remember where I heard that. I go, right here. Curtis gave you that. He goes, really? I said, yeah. He goes, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm going to be 55 and single. I'm going to have to figure something out.
And it's obviously public knowledge that we wrote both of Bob's books. So
yes, exactly. We should. Keyshawn Johnson, forget about that. It was the program that wrote his latest book. Sam McDowell is here. By the way, we're playing for Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. You're going to be at the Kansas City Barbecue store later this week. Great spot. For you to get stocked up. You know, the holidays right around the corner. We're tiptoeing up to Halloween, and, you know, then instantly it's Christmas, right? You immediately start with jingle bells and all that. There's that little way station called Thanksgiving. But immediately it'll be time to start shopping for the holidays. No better place, Sam, than the Kansas City Barbecue Store. 119th and Strangline, if you want to come by. Sauces, rubs, utensils, the grill itself. You consider yourself pretty good around the grill?
That's the only thing I will do, cooking-wise, is
I
like to grill, yeah.
Do you?
I literally think everything tastes better on the grill.
What's your specialty out there? You got any?
I don't think I'm good enough to say that I have a specialty.
There you go. That's me, too. I appreciate the honesty. I got your back. Good.
Most people will, oh, yeah, I'm really great at what, burgers? Really?
I think I am pretty good at burgers.
Yeah.
I think I am pretty good at burgers. And I'll take, you know what else I'm really good at? Hot dogs. Man, that's a beast to grill some hot dogs. Yeah, yeah. I do it just right.
Have you ever? Okay. I mean, it isn't often you go to a place and well, those burgers are terrible off the grill. Usually, there's a like
that's
a,
what I'm saying.
Like a baseline where
everything is better off the grill. Yeah. Like you could really screw it up, and it's still going to be at least halfway.
I will object.
You almost have to intentionally make. Screw something up to have it come off of a grill and have it be bad.
You can make a hell of a case that my wife made burgers on some kind of pan.
One who screwed it up. So we're saying you can't screw it up, and you start by saying your wife.
No. The grill. Oh, you can screw things up on the grill. Burn the outside of the chicken while it's still cold on the inside.
What chicken you can screw?
But almost every screwing up is overcooking. Minus leaving it on too long, almost impossible to have bad food off a grill.
Not with chicken. So I once got into like a 45-minute battle with a piece of chicken trying to cook this piece of chicken.
Yeah,
I think that's the last time I've.
Yeah, I've sent some chicken breasts out into the yard a couple of times. Yeah, that's happened.
It's a frustrating process.
Yeah, it is. It's been a while, and then I got a thermometer, and started like pulling my head out and being like, okay, let's have a plan here. But my wife cooked burgers, and when it's just sitting there in its own grease, and the grease is still there cooking in it, burgers on like a griddle, I think might be better than on the grill.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It just sits in all the juices and flavors.
Nah.
Yeah.
You need to use a charcoal grill then.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, yeah. Okay, because the juices don't fall down through the rack on charcoal. They dance back up and jump in the burger.
The flavor of charcoal is completely different.
Yes. There's nothing like a lump of coal to flavor something.
All right.
Okay, good call. What are you, Kingsford?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
The instant light.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Nothing like a hint of lighter fluid on the outside of your burger.
Have you heard of it?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Have you heard of it, Kingsford?
Yeah. I have a gas grill,
commercial.
You've got a gas grill. Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah. Thanks to my friends at the Kansas City Barbecue Store. You should stop by.
Okay.
I'll show you a few things.
Okay.
Okay.
I've just got the basic grill out there. So
you being one late and two now droning on, I have to break again. So we'll come back. We'll talk some more Chiefs. I promise with Sam McDowell next here in the program.
Due to circumstances beyond our control, we now present
the program with Soren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Talking to Sam McDowell here on the program. He's brought to you by Corona, Corona Light, and the Corona Premier. Not to mention the Corona Hard Seltzers. Perfect for your game day viewing. Grab you some Coronas for this weekend's game as they'll take on the Tennessee Titans. Did you like the personnel changes, Sam? The youngsters got a lot more snaps on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, Willie Gay's not there yet because he's still working his way back. You know what's interesting is
when will he be back, do you suppose?
I thought he'd play more this week than what he did.
He played less this week than he did the week before.
Yeah, so, when you say you like the personnel changes, I'm still waiting on him to get more time. You know, the best personnel change I thought they made was the one nobody talked about because of the Juan Thornhill one. But Rashad Fenton is playing significantly better football than Mike Hughes, and now he's the cornerback on those two wide receiver sets. They all play when there's three wide receivers out there because Snead moves inside.
Because Charvarius Ward is out.
With Charvarius Ward out. But I wonder if Fenton has played himself ahead of Ward whenever Ward comes back on those two wide receiver sets.
I think it's interesting. It'll be interesting to watch. But I think the one thing it says is that they've got four good corners.
I think they have four pretty good corners.
Okay, right. Which they don't have a guy that, like if you're a quarterback, we're going to pick on this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's this guy? Let's go get him.
The pigeon.
Yeah. Which I think is better than having, I'd rather have that than have, Stephen Gilmore at his height and then a guy who blows, right? Which I think is somewhat of the design. I think credit needs to be given to Steve Spagnuolo and Andy Reid in the front office for this is, I think that's been their plan. No weak link, which, the analytics guys will tell you, avoid a weak link on defense. That's more important than having a star, right? If you got to have a weak link to be able to make your cap work for a star, it doesn't work. And then I see Dan Sorensen, right? Like, he's the weak link. They found him. They were always finding where Dan Sorensen was. They got him off the field. And Juan Thornhill, I'm sure, made some mistakes out there and probably more mistakes than Dan Sorensen did. But he's not a glaring weak link that you just pick at. And I think that's been their game plan at the cornerback position. And the part that I don't think is getting talked about is Nick Bolton in for Anthony Hitchens. How often have we heard that Anthony Hitchens gets everybody lined up? Well, was he doing it from the sideline? Because he only played 11 snaps.
Well, he came out of the game, I think it's hard to say whether or not that was the plan with Nick Bolton.
No, I don't think it was the plan.
But we saw the impact.
But we saw the impact. If it had been the plan. The idea that they will just melt, like, you know, some wicked witch at the end of Wizard of Oz, because Anthony Hitchens isn't out there and everybody will be running around bumping into each other like it's, you know, what was that? The buzzer, you know, the vibrating football game.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, like all of a sudden what they're going to be out there.
Electric football.
Yeah. The idea that that's what's going to happen if Hitchens isn't on the field. No. So no more can we sit and be like, well, it may be that Hitchens can't, you know, grades horribly covering and doesn't, you know, range at all and all this, but he lines everybody up, so we're okay. No, like they got lined up just fine in the second half without Anthony Hitchens, right?
Yeah, and they were not getting lined up in the first 4 weeks either. So, I mean, if that's what you hang your hat on, that was, you know, what we identified as the number one thing you had to solve with this defense. Before you can do all else, you at least got to be in the right spot before the snap starts. So, I've long thought that they should play the young guys because they're more athletic and they've got more speed. Mm-hmm. So when you say that Thornhill probably made mistakes, well, we know he made mistakes. He also has the ability to cover his mistakes better than Dan Sorensen does.
Well, when you make a mistake, if the guy catches the ball and you can still run, you tackle him after a 12-yard gain instead of watching him go 76.
Or you can make up that ground in the air, too, when the ball's in the air. And 49 doesn't have the ability to do that.
Did you like the exchange of Tyrann Mathieu and Josh Briscoe?
what was it he said? Oh, yeah. You know, Tyrann Mathieu and I are kind of alike because we're both playing under the elements. You know, Tyrann Mathieu has an injured thumb. He plays instead. Here I am. My voice isn't up to par, but I'm still here doing the work. So
making it happen.
Tyrann Mathieu and I are the exact same level.
The exact same level. Plus,
kindred spirits.
Plus, we both punk Josh Briscoe all the time. So
I don't know that Josh got punked on that one, to be honest with you.
I did not think that was Tyrann Matthew's finest moment.
No, I don't think so either. Sam, great stuff. We'll talk to you this weekend on the Central Bank pregame show.
Hey, thanks, Ren.
Time for our Deli Fresh End of the Hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC Sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, how many times has a team won the first two games of a postseason series in walk-off fashion? Brought to you by Good Sense.